Best-selling author of The World is Flat and New York Times Foreign Affairs columnist Thomas Friedman is renowned for his direct reporting and analysis of complex issues facing the world. Winner of 3 Pulitzer Prizes, he has covered monumental stories from around the globe for The New York Times since 1981. Thomas Friedman, sponsored by Union College, will be coming to Proctor's Theater on Thursday, the 9th of February at 8 o'clock with a talk entitled The Big Trends Shaping the World Today, Economics, Technology, and Geopolitics. Friedman's The World is Flat sold over 4 million copies and won the inaugural Financial Times and Goldman Sachs Business Book of the Year Award. His new bestseller is Thank You for Being Late, an optimist's guide to thriving in the age of accelerations, which exposes the tectonic movements that are reshaping the world today and explains how to get the most out of them and cushion their worst impacts. It is a great pleasure to welcome Thomas Friedman to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. An honor.
Great to be with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, and it'll be nice to have you in town. When you have a talk which has a name like the one that this one does, which is pretty open, isn't it? Shaping the world, the big trend shaping the world today, economics, technology, and geopolitics. I assume it gives you a chance to talk about just about anything, but there is the elephant in the room that is the Trump administration, isn't there?
Well, no question, Joe. First of all, thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be coming to Union College and be able to give this this lecture and to your community. The lecture really is, though, about the themes of my book, and it is a little more tightly focused than that because I think we're in the middle of 3 accelerations all at the same time with the 3 largest forces on the planet, which I call the market, Mother Nature, and Moore's Law. The market is digital globalization, the way everything's now being digitized and globalized, making the world much more interdependent than ever. Mother Nature is climate change, biodiversity loss, population growth, that's accelerating too. And lastly, Moore's Law is technology, the fact that, coined by Gordon Moore back in 1965, he said the speed and power of microchips will double roughly every 24 months. It's now closer to 30, but that's happening, and that's just driving so much technological change faster and faster. And the 3 together are really reshaping the world. And the book is about those forces and how they're changing politics, the workplace, geopolitics, ethics, and the community.
Do you get a sense of where we are right now, as I say, of all of these things that are happening? Are they still on course? Is any of that disrupted by the disruption that we seem to be currently in politically?
It very well could be. Basically, I think what's happened, Joe, is that these forces have really, they've upset communities. They've thrown more people, more strangers together than ever before. So people now go to their grocery store and they see different people, different faces. They've thrown a total tornado into the workplace. You go to work now and the boss rolls up a robot next to you and he seems to be studying your job. And so if you think of the things that anchor people in the world, where they live and where they work, both have really been disrupted in a really significant way in the last few years. That, I think, has laid the foundation, if I might add, for both the Brexit move in the United Kingdom and for the Trump election in America.
Are we good at dealing with this kind of dizzying change?
Yes and no. People who are lifelong learners, they're actually doing quite well in this world. They're able to adapt. People who are not in a position to be constantly learning, either they can't afford it or they're not in a situation where they can, they're having a harder time. So you see not only different communities thriving around the country, but more often different parts of communities thriving. So people have really, high both social skills and technological skills, what I call STEMpathy skills, science, technology, engineering, math, plus human empathy. They're going to be the highest paying jobs. Those who are doing lower skill jobs, they're actually doing fine. It's the people in the middle who are doing, you know, white collar repetitive work or white or blue collar repetitive work. Machines, algorithms, and software have really eaten into those jobs, and I think that's where a lot of the distress is, and that's where we need to focus our assistance and our thinking as a community.
You write about the supernova in the book, one of the three forces, you say, in this book. Talk to us a little bit about that and why it is so impactful.
Well, the supernova is really my name for this thing we call the cloud. But, you know, I think calling it the cloud makes it sound so soft, so fluffy and cuddly. And I think it's something much more powerful than that. So I've renamed it the supernova, which is the explosion of a star. It's just pulsating energy out. And what this supernova is doing is really changing four kinds of power. It's changed the power of one. We now have a president who can tweet directly to hundreds of millions of people around the world from his bedroom, and that's quite amazing. And he can do it, you know, without any editor or any filter or any libel lawyer, for that matter, like a normal newspaper. At the same time, what's really scary is the head of ISIS can do the same thing from Raqqa province in Syria. So it's changed the power of one. It's changed the power of machines. Machines now have all five senses. We've never lived in a world where machines had all five senses. It's changed the power of ideas. Ideas now flow and change just so much more rapidly than we've ever seen before. And lastly, it's changed the power of many. You know, we, with populations growing, with people and machines more amplified, we're affecting the environment as a collective much more than ever, which is why the new, in fact, environmental era is being named for us the Anthropocene.
And when you look at, and again, this all comes back to where we are let's say this current administration, 4 years, is that become a blip, or does it become a very important and possible turning point to many of these things, especially when you're talking about issues like climate change?
Well, it's very important. They're here at a very important time, and you have to know what world you're living in. And I think the Trump administration is here at this incredible moment of acceleration. And the challenge is to get the most out of it and cushion the worst. My criticism of the president has been, to some extent, that he seems to want to rescue us from these accelerations by building more walls. And my argument is really how you enable, empower every American to live in a world with fewer walls, because ultimately I don't think a world of walls will benefit us as a country as a whole.
What do you think that there is in us that many people want those walls? And really, to go back to an early book of yours, to make sure that world isn't as flat?
Well, because the world is flat was really about a statement about technology, that we had created a platform where more people in more places than ever could compete, communicate, and collaborate faster than ever. But the fact is, I think we do crave walls, and you're not a bad person if you do. I feel like a good wall some days myself, because first of all, we want to feel that we live in a nation state where that does have borders, that does have defined borders, that people just can't walk in and out. And because we have a national culture. We like baseball. We like hot dogs. We like pluralism. We like gender equality. There's a lot of things that are to be an American, and that happen in this space we call America. And those borders mean something. They mean something to me. And so at the same time, you want to make those borders. Whenever I'm asked about the border question, I always say, I'm for a very high wall, actually. But a high wall with a big gate. That is, I want people to know that we do protect our borders. No one can just walk in here. At the same time, you want to have a flow across those borders, because that's what's actually made America great, that we've attracted all these energetic, smart people from around the world who keep starting new companies and bringing new energy and ideas and music and taste to our society that propels it forward. The question is, do we have the balance right? And I think a lot of people felt that we had more of a gate than a wall, and some people now want to write that balance. It's okay to want to write that balance, but you don't want to go the other extreme and just have a wall with no gate.
sponsored by Union College. Thomas Friedman is coming to Proctor's Theater on Thursday, the 9th of February at 8 o'clock to talk about the big trend shaping the world today, economics, technology, geopolitics. The new book is Thank You for Being Late, An Optimist's Guide to Thriving in the Age of Accelerations. So to take that word, optimist, you think we'll be okay?
You know, I think so, Joe. Maybe it's my Minnesota roots that I fall back on that. But it's, you know, when you go around the country, quite honestly, the kind of carnage is us that President Trump depicted in his inaugural address. It's not really true. We have communities that are suffering. We also have communities that are thriving. And we need to learn from them, and we need to learn how to scale them. I always tell people, if you want to be an optimist about America today, stand on your head. Because the country looks so much better from the bottom up than the top down. I'm not saying there aren't problems and there aren't issues, but there's a lot of people working these problems in communities all over this country, and some are doing pretty darn well.
The thing I love about the book is you very, in very common sense, kind of calm down terms, tell us why it seems things are spinning out of control, and they may not be spinning out of control.
Exactly. You know, I mean, one of the things I always tell people when people ask me what I do for a living as a columnist for the New York Times, I tell them I'm actually a translator from English to English. That's what I do. And I really try to break down complex subjects, as I think I've done in this book, so people can understand them more. So as Marie Curie once said, so they will fear things less. When people don't understand things, and they're easily swayed by demagogues from the right or the left. And my politics, my idealism is expressed by trying to enable people to understand more so they will fear less.
I mean, you make the point in the book that you have 10 billion things connected to the internet, but that's still less than 1% of the possible total of the things that can be part of this internet of things.
Yeah, this is going to get faster because we're putting sensors on everything. I mean, lights, toasters, refrigerators, they're all going to become intelligent and connected over time. That can be scary because if somebody hacks them, there's far more damage they can do. But we'll be able to learn so much more about our whole world as a result of that. Finding a needle in a haystack will become the norm, not the exception, in a world of big data.
One of the points that you make in the book, and we talk about, I mean, this whole idea of things spinning out of control and this thriving in this age of accelerations is that, as you say, that we have sped up our response time. It doesn't take us as long as it used to get used to these technological changes. Things that used to take generations, we can now do in a decade or so.
No, it's a very good point, Joe. It's a point I try to make in the book. But what's scary is that even though we're adapting faster, when Moore's Law keeps doubling the power of, you know, computer chips, basically, every 30 months or so, it always is a challenge to keep up. You know, I tell the story in the book where the engineers at Intel wanted to try to demonstrate to the people the in a graphic way, the power of Moore's Law when microchips just keep doubling roughly every 30 months. So they took a 1971 VW Beetle, and they said, what if this VW Beetle improved at the same rate that microchips had? What would it be like today? And they said that Beetle today would go 300,000 miles an hour, it would get 2 million miles per gallon, and it would cost 4 cents. So that's what happens when things keep doubling. That's what we're in the middle of. That's in a bit what we're chasing and what's chasing us. And the question is, how do you balance the workplace, education, and community to get the most out of that and to cushion the worst? Because there are downsides.
You interviewed Gordon Moore for the, I believe, 50th anniversary, mm-hmm. right, of Moore's Law?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
And what did that, I assume that's something that has an impact on you of learning about that and ultimately learning about him and what that has meant to us.
Well, it's a really good point. I mean, for me, that was like interviewing Babe Ruth, you know,
right.
Because Gordon Moore or Thomas Edison, he's one of the great inventors of our day, and it was such a thrill. He's such a humble man. He never expected the Moore's Law exponential to last this long. When you actually read the original article, though, it's amazing what he predicted. I mean, he basically predicted the PC, the internet in many ways, the cell phone. I told him that 1965 article, the only thing he missed was microwave popcorn.
And his original prediction was to look at, what, 10 years, and he thought that was a stretch.
He thought 10 years was a stretch, and then he thought it would double, over 10 years, and then he stretched out the time horizon to 24 months, and it's getting closer to 30 now, but it's still chugging along. It's still chugging along.
When you think about where that was 50 years ago, who are the Gordon Moores of today who are taking a look at these things and saying, okay, here is where we are going to be for the future. Here are the laws and the rules that are going to govern us for the next half a century.
You know, it's a very good question. I've got a couple of them in the book that I identified. Doug Cutting, the founder of Hadoop, software named after his son's toy elephant, has affected your listeners' lives more than they realize. He really created the open source version of a software that can connect a million computers to make them work like one. That's big data. That's Doug Cutting. Chris Wanstroth, the founder of GitHub, which is now the world's biggest open source software repository. I profile him. An older one, Irwin Jacobs, the founder of Qualcomm. Those guys made the inside of your cell phone. There's a lot of people out there who, you know, are reshaping our lives, and it'll be fun to look back in hindsight 10 years from now and see, you know, who was cooking what that reshaped the next global technology platform.
Does it make sense that all of this is going on and we have this rapidity, and yet for the last several months, maybe even for the last year, that we have been focused on what is happening politically, certainly since the election, certainly since the inauguration? And I assume you see this at the New York Times. I assume you see this whenever you go out and speak to people, that what is happening is what it seems to be, what everybody wants to talk about, even though many people find it deeply troubling.
Yeah, it's really a problem because, you know, obviously Donald Trump is a very different politician, that kind of politician, to say the least, a different character. I'd be lying if I didn't say I'm sometimes as entertained by it as the next person. It's all fun and games until we really hit a crisis. And we will. And when the world's changing this fast, you know, small errors in navigation can have huge consequences. When we just needed to go 500 miles at 10 miles an hour, if we had a leader who got us off track, we could get back on track with very little pain. But when everything is accelerating and you need to go 10,000 miles at 1,000 miles an hour, small errors in navigation can have huge consequences. We could find ourselves so off track as a country that getting on track, the pain of it could just be enormous. And so that's what worries me right now, and that's what I'm watching most closely.
I guess I wonder what a small error is. I mean, is a small error of getting into a tiff with Australia or Mexico and saying you're going to send in troops, or are we talking about larger things?
Well, you've raised a couple of them. You know, let's say that we do build a wall to Mexico and we force American companies to all come back and we turn Mexico into a failed state. I guarantee it, no wall will keep that chaos out. Or if we deny climate change right at the moment when it is clearly becoming most visible, where our oceans are rising and Miami is already dealing with flooded neighborhoods, and we waste 4 years denying it, or 8 years, God knows where that leads. Population control. You know, I talk in the book about the rising populations in Central America and sub-Saharan Africa, which combined with droughts in those regions have really robbed the ability of lots of people to live on the land now. So what's happening? They're trying to get into Europe and America. What are the two first things this administration did? They announced that they were going to ban the use of American government funds for family planning abroad. And they were erasing climate science, basically, from all these government websites. You know, those are exactly the wrong things to be doing right now. You cannot have an immigration policy if you don't also have a climate and population policy. If you think a wall will do it, well, ask the Europeans, because the Mediterranean, which is pretty wide and pretty deep, a lot wider and deeper than the Rio Grande, even the Rio Grande plus a wall, it hasn't kept people out.
I know in past conversations with you on this program, we've talked about China, and that has to be a big concern, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I never like to use the word China, Joe. I like to use the word one-fifth of humanity. Well, that's what we're talking about, okay? And so when you kind of get in some kind of trade war with one-fifth of humanity, that can affect in time everything from the value of your mortgage to the value of the currency in your wallet, to the cost of the tennis shoes on your feet. And I'm not for rolling over to China. We have some real issues with China. But those issues are almost always best addressed quietly and in secret, and not coming at them with a club that says America first, because they will come back at you with a club that says China first.
Thomas Friedman's new bestseller is Thank You for Being Late, an optimist's guide to thriving in the age of accelerations. He will be at Proctor's Theater in an event sponsored by Union College on Thursday, February 9th at 8 o'clock. The talk is entitled The Big Trend Shaping the World Today, Economics, Technology, and Geopolitics. You can find out more by going to proctors.org, proctors.org. Thomas Friedman, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Always an honor, and I thank you very much for your great work and for sharing your expertise and brilliance with us.
Well, thanks so much. This was a great interview, and I really hope people will come out and hear the thing live.
Look forward to having you. Thank you very much for being
thank
with
you.
Us. Again, well, Thomas Friedman's new book is Thank You for Being Late. He'll be at Proctor's Theater on Thursday, February 9th at 8 o'clock, proctors.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.